In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
I have always taken the position that when it comes to elections, any Republican is better than any Democrat. Even if you only agree with 51% of the Republicans' positions, that is still better than a Democrat with whom you disagree on 51% of their issues. But what do you do when the Republican is worse than the Democrat? Or that electing the Republican could actually end up with worse policies than if the Democrat got elected? Let me give you an example, a carbon tax. If Kate Brown gets elected, the Republicans in the House and Senate will oppose her simply because she's a Democrat. There will still be Democrats there, so it might get through, but you could possibly bleed off one or two reasonable Democrats and stop the carbon tax. But if Newt gets through, being a Republican, one or two Republicans are likely to support the Republican governor's carbon tax and virtually guarantee its passage. Now think about this. One, it's a tax based on entirely false premise. The total carbon dioxide in the atmosphere only makes up 0.039%. That's 33 molecules in 85,000. Man-made CO2 is one molecule in 85,000. That's 0.001%, 1,000th of a percent. You know what 1% is? That's one penny of a dollar. If you took that one penny and chopped it into 1,000 itty bits, one of those itty bits is man-made carbon dioxide. That teeny itty bit is what the Democrats and Republicans like Newt Beeler want to use to impose a carbon tax. Second, Oregon is already one of the most heavily taxed states in the nation, despite not having a sales tax, which of course is always lurking out there just waiting for an opening to get passed. Democrats are desperately trying to hide the fact that they want to raise more taxes in the next session because they can't spend enough. Taxpayers are maxed out. Corporations and small businesses here are getting pummeled. What do you think a carbon tax will do? If we have a Republican governor and Republicans in the state legislature push this through, Republicans will be the ones to punish businesses and taxpayers. Republicans punishing businesses and raising taxes. Who would have thought? Third, if a carbon tax goes through, it will be a massive transfer of funding, public funding, for the left and leftist organizations. You may as well have Oregon businesses and taxpayers cut a check to George Soros. Do you think Republicans will be able to match the hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money that will be diverted to leftist green groups that will be directly funded by this carbon tax? Finally, think of the long-term damage to Republicans if a Republican governor and Republicans in the House and Senate pass this carbon tax, and what would that do to the Republican Party itself in Oregon in terms of its voters? You think a few Republicans would swear off the Republican Party altogether, perhaps for good? Newt is already probably pro-abortion, so this isn't helping. But what are your chances of being a Republican, of picking up more seats, or eventually governor, if Republicans destroy their base supporters and drive them away? Or will Republicans lose even more seats and give the Democrats a supermajority because they've discouraged their base from turning out to support a Republican candidate? What then? The prospects here are bleak. If you're a Republican, especially one who has stuck it out over the long years, this ought to terrify you. This is a ghastly prospect with horrible potential outcomes. Do you sit home and let the Republicans lose yet another statewide race? Do you elect a Republican governor and watch the Republicans destroy themselves and possibly the state, perhaps for a decade to come? Do you hope that Newt is lying and doesn't really mean it when he says he wants a carbon tax? That maybe, just maybe, when he gets elected, other Republicans can stop him. Do you take that risk? These are terrible choices, horrible ones, with terrible outcomes. Is there any hope? So what do you do? What should you do? How are you even supposed to think about this? What are you supposed to believe? Now, the point of today's show is to wake you up, to make you think. We're always big about critical thinking here on iSpy Radio, and voting is a huge responsibility. There is always a lot at stake, and this election is no different than any other. Today, I want you to really listen to our guests. Coming up, we'll talk with Chuck Weiss, who's been a Republican supporter in part because of their party's opposition to so-called climate change. This election, he has now opposed the Newt Bueller because of Newt's support for the carbon tax and what that could mean to the state. But first, I want to welcome Chris Horner, a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. If you remember, CEI was one of the organizations that was sued by the Obama administration when he used the state's attorney general to punish them because they dared to not believe in global warming. Chris, it's good to talk to you.
Thank you, Mark.
So we wanted to talk to you today because you have two reports out, both of them rather alarming. One report details how activist donors are paying to place prosecutors in state attorney general's offices to pursue an expressly partisan agenda. Let's start with that first one. Tell our audience a little bit more about this. What exactly is happening and why?
Well, it's including in Oregon's office of attorney general, of course. And what we have here is, if you step back and recall that the climate agenda, it used to be the global warming, the climate agenda is a policy, a political, ideological agenda, but it's a policy agenda, and we have a process for this. We have a democratic process, and there was cap and trade legislation at the federal level, and it failed. And so the Obama EPA said, you know what, we have the authority we need after all, and we will just promulgate regulations. Those were stayed by the Supreme Court, or the marquee regulation, which the other ones needed to be in place before they could come into place. And so soon thereafter, as you noted, the Competitive Enterprise Institute was subpoenaed by an attorney general. It wasn't the administration, but the Obama administration. It was an attorney general who was in an informal coalition of activist state attorneys general who got together and decided that they would use law enforcement to cram down this agenda that the public didn't want. Certain jurisdictions can do this to themselves, of course. California is the leader on this, and I know Oregon follows, though, with a little more debate than California.
Yeah,
so CEI
much.
Was asked CEI was asked for 10 years of records, nearly all of its records, going back 20 years, and by an attorney general who, it turns out, after some litigation and some open records requests, we have found was scheming with plaintiffs' lawyers and activists and now major donors to make this happen through the courts. Well, that collapsed because under scrutiny, all of the wingmen of this New York attorney general who was leading the scheme fled. But recently, and with Oregon's active participation, they have, with the largesse of billionaire Michael Bloomberg, gotten the band back together. And so now we have, at minimum, six state attorneys general, with four or five more on tap, who have taken in one or two privately funded special prosecutors for climate change. Now, when pressed, this is being run through a nonprofit, as are all of these schemes we've found, and we may talk about others that we've revealed, but they're running the money through a nonprofit. Presumably, this sort of use of a cutout is because the donors know they can't just give the money to the attorney general and say, hire a guy to pursue issues of my interest. And they can't just give him the employee, or her, in your case, the employee. So what they've been doing, the donors have been paying nonprofits a premium up to 24% if they hire people to place in officials' offices.
Well, this is just astonishing to hear that these nonprofits and these billionaires are essentially having their own private army of state's attorney generals to enforce this climate change agenda. Let's go ahead and take a break there. This is fascinating. We definitely want to find out more about this, especially since it's happening here in Oregon. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Chris Horner of CEI. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Chris Horner. He is with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a senior fellow there. And we're talking about some rather shocking reports that they have just uncovered here that basically had where wealthy billionaires, billionaire, I guess you're wealthy, but they have these private armies of a state's attorney general to go out and sue over climate change, and CEI bore the brunt of this. So why don't you pick up the story where we left off here? I mean, this is fascinating that you've got these billionaires having their own state's attorney general to push a political agenda.
And very specific issues of the donor's interest. So if you just twist the prism a bit, let's say National Right to Life has endowed chaired special prosecutors in various state attorneys general's offices to investigate Planned Parenthood. I imagine that would lead to an extraordinarily busy Pulitzer Committee, fainting couches all over the place.
Oh, yeah. They'd be apoplectic.
Yes. So we have that, but we have it with a very sympathetic, in the media's eyes, politically correct cause. So what we have is, by contract, attorneys general have brought in what they call special assistant attorneys general. And here's the process. New York University it's just what's called a 501c3, like Competitive Enterprise Institute or the National Rifle Association. Planned Parenthood is. It's a nonprofit. Many private universities typically are. And these nonprofits, whatever their name, are being used to channel donor money through to staff up politicians, sometimes in their office, sometimes with an outside network completely off the books. This deal with the attorneys general combines both of those, and it metastasizes this scheme, this very underhanded dealing, to law enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
A billionaire has decided to fund special prosecutors for climate change by contract with AG, so I'll call them, so that he gives the money to New York University. New York University hires somebody they call a research fellow. They then engage in a contract with the attorney general. With yours, it's Ellen Rosenblum, and they contracted with Ellen Rosenblum to place a research fellow in the office of attorney general, who then appoints this person a special assistant attorney general. Now, the contract is that this person is to advance progressive environment, climate change, and renewable energy legal and policy positions. So, and while you will claim, well, it's bipartisan, of course it is. It's a bipartisan program so long as you agree to, quote, advance progressive climate change legal positions. So that's rhetorically silly and intellectually insulting. So then the person is to report back regularly to the donor. That's a contract item. And here were the inducements that Oregon was offered. A, if you take this special prosecutor, we will pay them, you set their salary. And in Oregon, the person is being paid $146,000-something a year for 2 years. We will also, the donors, will provide you an outside network of what they call pro bono. I'm not sure that word means what they think it means, but pro bono, outside lawyers provided by the donor on issues of particular interest to the donor. The special assistant AG is specifically to work on these issues of interest to the donor. They will provide a full-time PR staffer to the AG to promote the AG's work on this, and apparently an outside public relations firm out of California, all being paid for by the donor if the attorney general will, as part of their holding up their end of the deal, give office space to the special assistant AG, who can then chase the or ride the hobby horse of the donor. Now, of course, as we pointed out with that counterfactual, this would be explosive and national news for weeks if the parties were reversed. It
sure
is unprecedented. And in our report, which you can find at CEI.org, we publish Ellen Rosenblum's emails discussing this,
wow,
the unique arrangement, and suggesting that the appointee stop circulating emails announcing his presence because of the sensitivity of the appointment, that they run communications, that they watch what he writes, and make sure you don't call him a volunteer. He's being paid by a third party. Have we told the union about this, and so on?
So to be clear, one of these special assistant attorney generals, they were actually involved in the lawsuit against you guys, correct?
No, the progression was as I described it. They failed through legislation, they tried regulation. They failed through regulation, they tried the courts. That coalition blew up, so now a billionaire has provided presumably a place where they can gain privilege. They can keep their conversations about what they're doing secret. When these parties came after CEI, it was in their first try at this, a coalition that blew up and they dropped a subpoena and so on. Now they've gotten back together, huddling in a nonprofit, hoping for privilege, because again, this is a donor-funded scheme to investigate political opponents. CEI may be subjected to further investigation by these people, but that was during their first run at this.
So, but in terms of their appointments at some of these states' attorney general, including here in Oregon, do they have any kind of legal power, or are they just working more as kind of like advisors and strategists and to do some legwork essentially for the state's attorney?
It's fascinating. They are by statute possessed of the same powers as the attorney general herself.
Wow.
And
so
not
in theory,
employed.
They could bring a lawsuit against you guys.
Well, whatever they do will be done under color of state law and with a badge and a gun. I mean, they are the office of the attorney general. They just happen to be formally employed by the billionaire's little outfit there so that they can work on his issues by contract. It was whatever they do is the office of attorney general.
So,
they are just to pursue investigations on climate.
This is just, again, it's just astonishing to think that this is happening. I'm not surprised it's happening here in Oregon, but it's still astonishing that it's happening at all. Let's go ahead and take a break there. I want to find out how exactly is this at all legal. We'll ask Chris Horner that. Chris Horner is with the CEI, that's the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll link both his paper and his reports on iSpyRadio.com. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. This segment is sponsored by Landmark Pacific. If you need a new steel building or you have one that's showing its age, then you need to give my friend Dave Allmendinger a call. Check out LandmarkPacific.com. That's LandmarkPacific.com. We're talking today with Chris Horner. He is with CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and talking about some reports that he has out detailing and uncovering some of what they have found, which is where wealthy donors are essentially putting operatives within state's attorney general's offices. So how is this even remotely legal?
Right. Well, it isn't, but I'll tell you how they're pulling this off until challenged. In other words, let me skip to the end first. You need legislative oversight on this, and you need it now.
Oh, absolutely.
What happened was, by your legislature, if you can force it, hopefully it'll take one who's noisy enough, but you need a committee that has jurisdiction to perform proper oversight, which is, how did government come to be used this way?
Yeah.
Which was my question when I began asking Oregon Department of Justice for records. Here's what we know. The nonprofit asked the Oregon Department of Attorney General, or Justice, the AG, to certify that they had the authority to bring in a third-party funded special prosecutor. Or prosecutor. He's just an additional attorney. And Oregon so certified. And they did so by saying, Oregon Attorney General has broad authority to hire special legal assistants as she deems appropriate under Oregon Revised Statute 180.145. That provision doesn't provide any such authority. It says that the cost of such special assistance shall be charged to the appropriate officer or agency. It doesn't say to Michael Bloomberg. It says quite the opposite. And in fact, the provision before it says each assistant, because this person's more akin to an assistant, we can argue about this, but each assistant attorney general shall be payable as other state salaries are paid. I promise you, being paid once a month by Mike Bloomberg's organization is not the same way other state employees are paid. This on its face, first, this is a statutory office. She's there to execute the authority given her by the legislature. Where is your authority to do this? If it exists, you have yet to reveal it. Now would be a good time since you've been caught. You did say, I have broad authority. You didn't cite to the authority to do this. Even if the Oregon legislature said, you may bring in the monopoly man's private special assistant AGs to pursue his issues of keen interest. That is not a get out of the Constitution free card. So even if the legislature said, go ahead, you still have problems of due process. Who do you think? Guess who's paying the person's salary and benefits? It's not the Department of Justice. It's not the taxpayer.
Yeah, which makes it very hard for taxpayers or anybody else to even know that this is happening. And, you know, it was one thing when the Obama administration decided to weaponize the Department of Justice and go after you guys, and same thing with the IRS, going after conservative organizations. Now you have billionaires weaponizing attorneys general. I mean, this is really shocking that they think that they can just use the power of the courts and the legal system to enforce their own political views. And as you say, if this was being done where a state's attorney general were using the power of the AG office to go after Planned Parenthood, using wealthy billionaires like the Koch brothers or some of these other ones, the media would just be screaming about this for weeks at a time. But it turns out it's not just the AG's office. Apparently, this is also happening in governor's office. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that? That's your other report.
Yes. So this week we issued a second report, and it lays out in much more detail documents that the Wall Street Journal reported in an editorial in January called Climate of Unaccountability. That was about Governor Jay Inslee in nearby Washington State. He is an exemplar of what we've now found is apparently going on throughout governor's offices and AGs. Similar situation. Donors will route money through a foundation which will hire a green group, which then contracts with the governor as vendor. Not kidding. The governor, Governor Inslee, is the vendor to the World Resources Institute, and his deliverable is to give space to a WRI employee to be his energy and climate advisor, with the other obligation of reporting back on a regular schedule what he's doing for the governor. So once again, this is privately funded staff. This is actually off-books governance, as is, I suggest, the Bloomberg scheme for private prosecutors. But this is all a student body far left once they lost control of levers of power in Washington. These folks ran to the states, governors and AGs. So you've got privately funded advisors to governors. And again, if the EPA administrator didn't like what Congress has given him and he had the Koch Foundation rent the building across the street and staff it with the staff he really thinks he deserves and donors agree, it would be a national scandal.
Oh, why? Absolutely.
Because it's against the law. Is that a dumb law or is it a smart law? And why is this okay?
So the reason that they're doing this, I mean, is it because that by using this off-the-book system that the AGs and the governors are essentially able to hide what they're actually trying to do while they're working under the taxpayers?
Well, if you read their applications, those being the attorneys general who sought this, because there was a process and the donor required that they say, I won't be doing this work unless you give me this money or these special prosecutors. And so the reason they're doing it is so that they can do what they and the donor agree needs to be done more of. Some of them were extremely expressed. The New York Attorney General, who got two of these prosecutors, said, look, I'm so active being the resistance, I can't do my job. We post the application. You can decide if I'm interpreting or not. And they said, if I get these gentlemen, and they are at $230,000 a year, they're getting special lawyers to pursue specific cases that they say we wouldn't be able to do this unless you give us privately funded prosecutors. And so it's work for hire. It's mercenary. And they all had to say the same thing. Unless you do this for me, I can't do this. And if you want to extend that and say, I can't do this for you, I think that's not unreasonable.
Well, this is all extremely shocking, and I hope that this is going to wake people up. But we definitely need to have you back on to talk about this more in depth. Chris Horner, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, Chuck Weiss, do we elect a Republican or not? Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. If you're just joining us, we have just wrapped up with Chris Horner of CEI talking about some shocking reports that leftist billionaires are secretly funding staff and planting them in states' attorneys general offices and governor's offices to push global warming hysteria. We'll link those reports, which include emails from Oregon's own Attorney General Rosenblum, trying to keep things quiet and hidden about what they're doing. As I said at the beginning of this show, I have always believed that any Republican is better than any Democrat. But what do you do in the rare instance that electing the Republican is actually worse than having the Democrat? Is that the case this year with Republican candidate for governor Newt Bueller, who was pushing for a carbon tax suddenly? Surprisingly, he never mentioned that he wanted that during the campaign, during the primary campaign. I'd like to welcome now Chuck Weiss. He is an airline pilot, meteorologist, and global warming debunker, which we like him for very much. Chuck, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to be here.
You know, the reason we wanted you on is because you are taking a strategic stand on the carbon tax, that the stand that electing Kate Brown is less likely to lead to a carbon tax than what would happen if Newt Bueller got elected, because he'd pull over some of those Republicans and end up getting that passed. I'd like to read something from a Google group that you're part of, which really got our attention. At the time, you were responding to someone who felt that not voting for Newt would simply elect Kate Brown, and that if Kate Brown wins, you lose, along with all of your values and issues. You wrote this in response to that person: "Our group has been quite visible and credible to conservative circles in educating everyone about climate and demonstrating effectively and conclusively what a load of hooey the entire concept really is with respect to carbon dioxide causing climate change. If Newt believes contrary by listening to radicals, which have obviously surrounded him, he has to know there is opposition to his belief and owes it to his base to look into all aspects of these claims. But he didn't do it. To make it worse, his staff and likely himself has spurned any attempts by us to meet with him and to get the faults and to get the facts about CO2. His staff and likely himself have made a calculated decision and risk party alienation over this topic, and now others, to try to gain votes from the left that he thinks will somehow outnumber the ones that he's turning away from his conservative base. So has Newt yet shown any openness to listen to you guys or to real science on global warming?"
Well, their staff, Mark, has reached out to us now, but only after we got very noisy about our opposition to all of this. And frankly, I can't tell you whether they're going to actually reverse their position on it. What I was obviously very upset with, along with a lot of other people, was, as you said, when he was running in the primary, he called Kate Brown's notion of having a carbon tax a honeypot slush fund for Democrats. And so I figured, okay, if the guy is going to be against this, like he says so strongly in the primaries, this is my candidate, because I don't want a carbon tax. There's all kinds of reasons we could discuss as to why it's a horrible idea. So I was supporting him. But then, as you know, as soon as the primary was finished, now all of a sudden he's saying, well, I think I'll entertain a carbon tax. And when we talked to the campaign, they told us, yeah, he plans on, you know, he'd like to enact what he calls a broad-based carbon tax without really defining what that means. And then there was some discussion about perhaps maybe they could substitute this for the gas tax. Well, what's the point in doing it if you're going to do that? That's not even the purpose of the thing. So it's a very confusing, muddled up mess, and we've yet to sort it all out. But I've made it pretty clear, unless he backs off from this and gets realistic about what this would actually do for climate or anything else, I can't support him, and I won't.
Yeah. And it is scary to think that a Republican is pushing this whole carbon tax. So talk to our audience a little bit about what the ramifications of that tax would be should Newt get it passed.
Well, if Newt ever gets this passed, just look around you. I mean, you know what's really funny about this summer, Mark, is that have we heard in the news about the bad forest fire season and how terrible it's all been, how climate change now, according to the radical environmentalists that push carbon taxes and everything, they're saying it's worse now than it ever was. California had its worst forest fire year ever, and the drought continues, and it's all due to climate change, and we've got to do something to stop this. Well, California, excuse me, has had a carbon tax in place, or their cap and trade program in place, for 12 years. Arnold Schwarzenegger was the guy back in 2006 that passed their cap and trade law, AB 35. And right now, because of that tax or the cap and trade program, you're paying a dollar more per gallon for gasoline in California on average, and your electric bills and your heating bills are 40% higher than they are in states that don't have this. And what effect did this have on the climate? Absolutely none. These people are screaming, yet they've had this in place for 12 years, and it's been enacted in other places around the world, and it's done nothing to stop the growth of CO2 because the human emissions aren't as important as these people claim they are. They're lying about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It wouldn't affect the global temperature at all. My problem with it, or a large part of my problem with it, is that it's going to be a massive transfer of public funds for the left. I mean, this would fund their political activities for decades to come. And here we have a Republican pushing this idea. I mean, why not just, you know, cut out the middleman and cut a check from the taxpayer to the Democrats?
That's pretty much the way I look at it. I mean, and then you can go well beyond California to look at what a disaster these programs have been where they've been implemented. I mean, right now in Australia, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull lost an election because of the horrible things he did with the climate policies down there. And their energy prices in Australia, their politicians, including him, promised their citizens, if we go ahead with this carbon reduction emission stuff and pass our carbon taxes here, and do renewable energies, that the price of energy was not going to go up very much. In fact, some of his so-called analysis said it would actually fall, when in fact the cost of a megawatt hour of energy now in Australia doubled from $40 to $80. And so the citizens are outraged and are fed up with this because they were lied to about it. It did nothing for their climate. And so they pushed this guy out. It's failed there. And then if you look up in Germany, across the pond, their reduction goals have failed, and they spent $580 billion trying to reduce CO2 emissions in this failed, stupid effort that did them no good, and the money's gone, and now their citizens are upset about that. And up in Canada, where Justin Trudeau has enacted carbon taxes, they're getting enormous pushback in three provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Ontario. Yes. All of these provinces want nothing to do with it because their energy prices are going up. They see money leaving their economy. Jobs are going away. And the whole concept has just been nothing but a disaster. And is it doing anything to the climate? Of course not.
Yeah.
And it isn't affecting the atmospheric CO2 levels. They continue to go up because nature is the primary driver of these CO2 levels in the atmosphere due to the modest amount of warming we've had over the last 50 years.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get, why Newt is even pushing this anyway, because he's so running against the tide from what we see in other circles, like you say, Canada and Germany and Australia. All right, let's go and take a break. Coming up, isn't this just like the Never Trump movement? No, and we'll say why it isn't after this. All right, back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's an airline pilot, meteorologist, and global warming debunker. And unlike a lot of global warming alarmists, he actually has a degree in meteorology. So, Chuck, I think a lot of people listening are saying, oh, my gosh, how could we even think of not voting for the Republican? And people may be out there saying, oh, this is just so totally reminiscent of the Never Trump movement. How would you respond to that?
Well, I just can't. This idea of carbon taxing is critically important because politically, and I hate, you know, it's too bad that you have to mix science with politics because they should have never gotten into politics, but unfortunately it did. But because it did, it's now become a critically important issue for voters because what the people pushing this really want to do, as it looks like to me, is they want to try to take control over the energy sector, just like they have healthcare, where they're running the show by being able to price the cost of practically anything that consumes energy. And I just don't think that's right, because to begin with, the whole idea of a carbon tax and controlling carbon emissions is based upon a lie. The first premise is that we're putting CO2 into the air and causing all this enormous growth of atmospheric CO2. Well, that's just not true unless you believe the IPCC's burn model, which has been proven by actual measurements that we're able to take with carbon isotopes, that it extremely and grossly overestimates the length of time a carbon atom spends in the atmosphere after some sort of human combustion puts it there. They have a horribly bad fit with respect to what we're able to actually measure. And if you take the carbon isotopes we can measure and model them that way, it turns out that the amount of CO2 that humans put into the atmosphere cannot exceed 4.4% of the total that's there. So we've got 410 parts per million in the atmosphere now. The human component of that is only 18. Yeah. If you model this thing to the perfect fit that Dr. Ed Berry has, and you can go to his site and read all about this. It's very fascinating.
Well, and that's the thing that drives me nuts is they're trying to fix a problem that's not fixable. I mean, we had Dr. Tim Ball on a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying if you removed every human being from the planet and all of the effects that humans do as part of their daily life, and you left one human behind, one human scientist, and they tried to measure the impact of suddenly all those humans going away, they couldn't even measure it.
Yeah, well, according to Barry's work, you would be able to measure, it would go down by 18 parts per million if all human emissions stopped. But that's 4.4% of the total. It's still grossly insignificant to what the burn model predicted it would be, and that's something you can actually measure in reality. So if you've got to pick between what you can see clearly happening in observations, and we can, because we took the carbon isotopes from the atomic nuclear weapons test that both the United States and the Soviet Union did back in the 60s, and there was a special form of carbon dioxide that was emitted with those tests. It was the carbon-14 isotope, and we were actually able to watch it go down in the atmosphere naturally after the testing stopped when we both reached agreements not to do atmospheric tests anymore. Turns out that that carbon-14 only stays in the atmosphere 14.4 years compared to an almost infinite amount of time, 80-100 years and more by the burn model. And that makes a significant, huge difference in how much humans can contribute to the total that's in the atmosphere. Yeah. And so you read the research by Dr. Barry, and you can just see, the perfect fit that he's been able to come up with using those isotopes that show that we are not having the impact with the total CO2 in the atmosphere as claimed. And then we can even get into the business of the founding work in atmospheric science, which showed that CO2's contribution to any sort of warming of the troposphere is negligible. It just is.
So when you look at a politician like Newt, who is out there, you know, getting behind this idea of a totally false idea and false agenda, you know, you have to question his judgment. And I know that there are Never Trumpers out there, you know, gleefully rubbing their hands saying, see, I told you so, principles over politics. But this isn't Never Trump. I mean, the Never Trumpers were conservatives, they said, who just didn't like Trump and refused to see that Trump really was a conservative. And he's out there pushing conservative values and policies. They just refused to see it, even now with a stellar conservative record. In Newt's case, he's not pushing a Republican agenda. He's not pushing a conservative agenda. He's pushing a Democrat socialist agenda. And, you know, when I think of Newt, I'm not entirely sure who he is. I'm not entirely sure what he stands for. But when I remember very vividly a time that we went to hear him at a conservative luncheon, and he was just enthralled by Oregon's socialized medicine, Oregon's Obamacare. I mean, this guy was a true believer and absolutely in love with this idea. And, you know, we talk about the deep state, and given what he stands for, given what Newt stands for and what we've learned about the deep state, is it so hard to believe that Newt could be a plant by the Democrats to control the governor's office no matter who wins? I mean, any thoughts on that?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, you can't get in close enough to the campaign. And I've never met the guy at all personally. And I only began to become aware of his name when he started. I briefly heard about him when he first got into the legislature, but not really that much because he wasn't in my district. And so, but then when he started running for the primaries, that's when he started becoming a lot more visible. And like I said, at the beginning of the campaign, when he was fighting in the primaries to win that, he was an ideal candidate just looking at this one issue that I know a lot about. But like I said, he turned on everybody after he won the primary, and now we're talking a totally different game now that he's going to be up against Kate Brown. And I just... I'm not convinced that he's taking issues off the table when he has to debate Kate Brown by taking this position post-primary. Yeah. Because, like I said, I've talked to the campaign myself, and they seem pretty serious about doing a carbon tax. And it's like they haven't even considered and looked around them to see what a disaster that would be to even try this. Yeah. And so where is he getting this information that somehow we can control the climate by enacting something like this? I mean, the whole idea, if you just sat down, looked at the data, looked at the states and other parts of the world that have tried this, you could see what a stupid idea it is, and it's not going to make any difference to the climate at all.
Well, and the lying about it is what bothers me. I mean, you don't suddenly wake up one day and think, hey, carbon tax is a really great idea, when previously you had said that it was a horrible idea and a honeypot, as you said. All right, up next, to vote Newt or not to vote Newt. And if you're out there feeling confused, well, that's good. That's how you build your critical thinking muscles. Oregon has an exciting food industry, and if you want to be a chef, own a restaurant, be a baker, whatever you want, you should go to award-winning Oregon Coast Culinary Institute, OCCI. Attend school on the Oregon Coast, and in just short 15 months, you're done. Learn more at OCCI.net. That's OCCI.net.
We'll Food is where the heart is. Seriously, who doesn't love food? Here at the Oregon Coast Culinary Institute, we are passionate about the culinary arts, and we're looking for students who are just as passionate as we are. With a 15-month intensive program, hands-on training, and individualized attention from our instructors, you could be working in the kitchen of your dreams in no time. And let's not forget the on-campus student housing. Sound enticing? Check out OCCI.net for more information and look for the Oregon Coast Culinary Institute at your local college fair this fall.
And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Chuck Weiss. He's an airline pilot, meteorologist, and a forceful global warming debunker. We've been talking with him today because he is so opposed to Newt Bueller, the Republican, running for governor because Newt's support for a carbon tax and the long-term damage that will do not only to the state but to the Republican Party for years to come. Because if Newt wins and pushes a carbon tax, Republicans in the legislature will be forced to go along. If Kate wins, they will naturally oppose it. So the question is, do we vote for Newt or not to vote for Newt? And, you know, a common refrain from that Google group of scientists that you belong to is that it's the lack of trust that seems to get people. If they can't trust him on this climate change and carbon tax issue, how can they trust him on other issues? Is that how you feel? And if so, what would it take to gain your trust?
Well, what they're going to have to do is basically say that they didn't look enough into this whole issue. And after they get briefed on it, they'll back down and completely reverse their position. There's nothing wrong with saying that you had incorrect facts or didn't look at something the right way or didn't look at enough of it to make a rational decision about it, and then you'll reverse. We're certainly willing to help out and reach out to them to do that.
Well, and in fact, that would be awesome if they did, because that would really help bring exposure to this issue, where Newt suddenly says, you know, I've looked at this now, I've talked with actual scientists, and this is a total scam. We need to really look into this. Why are we funding this at all? I mean, just think of the possibilities that could open if he was to suddenly reverse tack on that.
Yeah, and it's a real mess, because what's happened over the years, Mark, is that the federal government has gotten involved in this game. You know, this actually started a long time ago. You go back to the Clinton era. At the beginning of the Clinton era, when Al Gore was vice president, this environmental championship game of his was real important. And he's the one who really got the ball rolling and started about promoting climate hysteria and saying CO2 is changing the climate. And he had a small number of academics at the universities. In fact, some of them came from Oregon State. I studied under them, and I knew exactly what they were doing. And they claimed they could model the climate, and Al Gore was interested in finding out and having them support his idea that CO2 could change the climate. And once the floodgates opened with the federal money to start pouring it and pumping it into these universities to develop and run climate models, it became a racket, where if the idea is you develop a climate model, which, by the way, can't predict the climate, they just lie about it and say that it can, but they don't have the skill to do it. But if they say that they do and CO2 becomes a problem, they fatten their budgets at these departments all around the country at the universities enormously. And this is exactly what the Clinton administration did. They opened the floodgates, the research money from the federal level started pouring in, and these guys are making comfortable livings, and unfortunately, they're snake oil salesmen. They're not telling the truth about the science, and they're pumping out bad research, and this stuff now is available to politicians, and it may be one of the reasons why Newt has been so misled about this stuff, and it's tragic.
It is.
It's something that should have never happened, but unfortunately, you've got people selling hysteria that make good money doing it, and if they ever admit that they were wrong and that this really isn't the problem that they said that it was, guess what? Their research money goes away, and they don't have a job. So they're not about to give this up, and it's a struggle that we've been fighting with them ever since this started back in the early 90s when the Clintons got into the White House and started funding all of this nonsense.
Well, it seems to me such dangerous and rather scary territory that we are wading into here, where we're considering not electing a Republican governor when we've got Kate Brown there. But you throw into the mix what we learned from our previous guest, that leftist billionaires are secretly placing staff in attorneys general's offices and governor's offices to force through global warming and things like this carbon tax. You would hope Newt as governor would do away with that, but, you know, if he's for carbon tax, would he? I mean, how do you trust him?
Well, you know, this is the interesting question that when you're not part of the elite closed circle that's surrounding his campaign, we don't even know who talked to this guy. Where is he getting this information from? We don't have any answers to any of this right now. We've been asking for them. So maybe it's this inner circle that you're talking about that's already reached him, and who knows what they do and say to persuade somebody to do what he now says that he wants to entertain if he becomes governor, which is a carbon tax. It's just completely baffling to me that you would have somebody do a 180 like this from the primary to post-primary, where he's now going to go head-to-head with Kate Brown.
I can't imagine he would have gotten elected in the Republican primary if he had been trumpeting the fact that he wants a carbon tax. You know, in that Google group there, Gordon Folks had said that we would be better off with an inept Kate Brown if all that Newt Bueller wants to do is to be in a more effective climate alarmist. And like I said, this is scary territory. You know, if the election was held today, how would you cast your vote?
If the election was held today, I would not be casting a vote for Newt Bueller because he hasn't clarified his position enough. We don't know what he's really going to do. This trust issue comes into play because of the about face that he did. So it's kind of the same thing as what you're told if you were going to be a juror. Yeah. You know, if you're called to jury duty, you know, when you're deciding a case, trying to decide a case, the judge in the courtroom always instructs the jurors, you know, if any witness gets up on the stand and lies or misleads in any way on just one part of their testimony, then you have to discard the rest. Because if they lie on one thing, they'll lie on another.
Yes.
And so Newt has kind of done an about face, and it makes you wonder, what can we trust him? How can we trust him to do what he says he's going to do when he has these debates, when he changed his position at the turn of a dime? It's very disturbing.
And it is. And I know that you have an upcoming meeting with his staff, and I hope with Newt as well. And so we're hoping that that will go well. We're definitely going to have you back to catch us up on that. Chuck Weiss, thank you so much for your time.
Well, you're quite welcome, Mark.
I have to admit, today's show does give me real pause about supporting Newt. I will have to think long and hard about this, because it shows a truly fundamental misunderstanding of the role of government and a complete lack of awareness of how the left operates and funds itself using public monies. We will continue this discussion next week with the very level-headed Jane Carroll, a Portland talk show host and longtime political advisor, to get her thoughts on all this. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, mark@ispyradio.com. I hope this show gave you pause. I hope it concerns you. But I also hope that this show didn't discourage you like there's no hope at all. What I really hope is it inspires you to get more involved. Demand that Newt change his mind on a carbon tax and to oppose it, any form of it. Demand that the Republican Party gets a hold of Newt and tells him to knock it off and act like a Republican. Contact your state representative and say that you want them to apply pressure and not to back him if he tries this in the legislature. The whole reason we're here is because only 30% of you out there bothered to vote in the primary. How did sitting it out help? It's not about sitting it out. When you hear politicians about to do stupid things and commit political suicide, it's about getting more involved than ever. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.